The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
On this episode of Revelator, I welcome Michael from Terrorizing Records, also Jeff from the band Three Pill Morning, the top movies at the box office, and much, much more here on Revelator.
And enjoy the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Revelator. I'm your host, Ryan, and I have got a big-time show for you this evening. We've got Jeff from Three Pill Morning who's going to stop by a little bit later, and also a gentleman who I've come to really appreciate and the project that he's working on, and that is Michael from Terrorizing Records, who, you know what, now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the moment you've all been waiting for, coming to the Revelator show tonight on Omnis.tv, hailing from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., where work is done by men who swing gavels, I bring you the founder of Terrorizing Records, Michael Rocucci.
Ryan, how are you, man?
I'm doing good, Michael. Hey, thanks for taking the time out. I know you've been busy, man. You've been hitting the circuit, doing the radio circuit, you know, working on the film. You are a busy, busy man here this week, man.
Dude, I'm getting pumped up from that introduction. I feel like a little bit of Macho Man Randy Savage wants to come out in me a little bit right now. Man, it's been a lot going on, but there's good energy out there, and I'm feeling it from this show, and I'm pumped to be on and pumped to be with you guys tonight. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Ooh, yeah, dig it. Oh, sorry, that's my I had to, man. You said Macho Man, and it just comes out of me. The only thing I'm missing is a pack of Slim Jims. But hey, you know what? I want to talk to you about Terrorizing Records, and you know, you guys, you've been around for almost 2 years now, coming up on your 2-year anniversary as a company. Talk to me about starting the company and the name Terrorizing Records.
Terrorizing came about right after I was done with coaching college baseball, and you know, with working with a lot of young people, I saw the news and the media using the war on terror and the word terrorizing, and everything was terror related, and just such a negative connotation to the youth and to the people that could, you know, change things and could do things in our world. So I wanted to. I didn't have an advertising budget, so I wanted to come up with a name that would catch on, and you know, you could find in the media, and I was hoping that if it became popular enough that when you heard the word terrorizing as it pertained to this war on terror, war on hugs, or whatever they're warring on these days, I felt like terrorizing, earth rising, could be a better connotation for it, could be a more positive message. So if the media or the government are going to use these types of words, then we can use words the same way, and we can put positive connotations on them, so that those words don't instill the fear that they're meant to instill. And so terrorizing was socially conscious from the beginning. And then rather than, you know, throwing up signs and taking off my shirt and protesting everything in the world, you know, there's something very good out there known as music therapy. And I wanted to celebrate what was great and positive about this world and about something that we as human beings have created in this world. And that's music and communication through all sorts of different cultures. So I wanted to choose a word that wasn't English based, and I wanted to choose a word that was older and hadn't been used in quite a few hundred years. And Terra was what I chose. And more of being a word, I wanted it to be an action in leading to a verb and rising. And so Terra Rising was born 2 years ago. And that is, that's where the name came from.
Very cool, man. You know what? I think I'm with you on that whole, like, you know, the terror level, you know, like they had on Fox and stuff, you know, like the color bar and stuff. I'm like, did they just change the color code from Bert to Ernie and terror level? Like,
right. It's the street light of death. If you go through, you don't know who, which Al Qaeda group is associated with who, but no, it is, you know, it's easy to use rhetoric, and it's easy to, you know, have these ideas put out there, but I think it's also easy to combat it. It's easy to see through it, and it's much easier to collaborate with people and than to fight people, I think. And that's at least what I've seen through my experiences with terrorizing.
Yeah, and that leads me to my next question, which is the project that you're working on, that you have been working on, you know, really, I imagine, since you started the company, and that is the documentary film Music Therapy. This is such a wide topic, too, because you're really getting into a lot of areas that I think aren't discussed as much. You hinted on the show and about, you know, mental illness, childhood development. A lot of these things go undiagnosed or untreated in our company on a large, large scale, and we just kind of brush under the rug. And I appreciate you taking the effort and, you know, taking the bull by the horns, for lack of a better word there, and really trying to drive home the point of how important music is in everyone's lives, not just, you know, people who are, you know, working 9 to 5 and, you know, making a good living, but also the people who are struggling and trying to find a better avenue to deal with, you know, the struggles of life, whether it be their kids or the kids themselves or someone who has an illness. Talk to me about the passion of this film that you're putting into it, and, you know, just the over idea that you hope to achieve with it.
I really appreciate that question, Ryan, and it's a true passion, and it's something that I feel with music. It's cross generational, it's cross cultural. There's not a country, there's not a religion, there's not a group of people on earth that don't have music at their very core of their beginning. And there's a lot of differences in ideology throughout this world, but music. I mean, I'm telling you, and I think I said it on a show before, but you can go through so many different parts of this world and you can hear different types of music, but you can hear similar elements as well. The music is different, but elements are similar. And so with music therapy, it really makes a lot of sense, because you're not learning an instrument, you're not learning how to sing, you're learning a non-musical goal. So music therapy is really the technique of taking music and using it to, you know, for as an example, to learn to communicate with your parents. Autism right now, the parents' divorce rate in regards to children with autism is about 80%. And the divorce rate in America is over 50%. So that's even worse. And with music therapy, it's really developing not only the relationship with the client and the therapist, but also the therapist and the family and the child or the adult being given this treatment. And so it's really kind of taken on a life of its own. And the film itself has gone through a lot of different formations. So we really have now concentrated solely on music therapy and just this incredible benefit. I mean, autism, Alzheimer's, I mean, folks that have high anxiety, people that are just grieving from the loss of a loved one. These are real things that are happening to millions of people every day. And so music being non-narcotic based, not obviously, so that means it's non-addictive. There's qualities to it that have a holistic approach, but it's completely medically and scientifically researched and proven to be an effective form of healing.
It sounds, I mean, you know, looking back, you know, music therapy as a whole, I mean, when you look at this film that you're working on, is there anything that sticks out in your mind, you know, people you've worked with or people you're going to work with that, you know, stories that you could share from the road that have kind of really open your eyes and go, yeah, you know what, this is definitely the right direction I should be heading here with this film?
Sure. There are tons, and it's really hard. And I could talk from a past, present, and future standpoint, and I'll try to hit on all three. From a past standpoint, I had somebody in Tennessee mention something about a person in Texas that got Ben Folds involved with music therapy, and I happened to just tweet a person while I was in Texas randomly that happened to be that person that the person in Nashville had told me about. And to truth be known, and I have witnesses to the fact, we had no prior knowledge of this person knowing any of what had happened before. And so it was a very synchronicity is something that has followed us along the way. The Hochstein School has opened up its doors, and we've seen Sam Maloney, young man, you know, that we're working with from Hochstein School. Sam, he's used music therapy to find this incredible talent with photography, you know, and seeing music lead to a different type of art form is incredible. So he used music, and what was really neat was we got to watch him take his photography and then put the music he wanted to the photography. So not only did he shoot the film, he also created the music video for it. So we actually got to watch the process and him working with the music therapist and the garage band programs and things like that. So you're incorporating computer programming, recording, music, photography. It's really vast when it comes to the subject. So that was a really cool experience. And from a future perspective, we actually have an opportunity to visit North Dakota and interact with some of the music therapists that are working with the different Indian nations that, that exist. You know, a lot of people think Canada and Mexico are the countries that border the United States, but a lot of people forget that Native Americans, American Indians, have their own countries right here in our own, in the United States. And so that to me is an extremely personal and exciting adventure to take, you know, Standing Rock with Sitting Bull and being able to film there and having the opportunity to see how music therapy or and hear about how music therapy is helping a completely different country that, that has been disenfranchised by this country. That's a part of our trip in the fall. These are really exciting things, and that'll be with Megan Maskow of the University of North Dakota, who is doing amazing things in the northern Midwest. So yeah, this is definitely I want to pick and choose. There's one story in particular, a girl that was suffering from a terminal illness. I got to see music therapy from an emergency room perspective. And the young girl, she suffered from something that's called it's a terminal illness, and there's actually no cure for it. And I won't go into the specifics of it, but there is actually no known cure. There's actually no known pharmaceutical implement to relieve pain or frustration or anything like that. It's just you have to deal with it. And she's four. Wow. It's tough to tell a four-year-old you have to deal with it. So yeah. I saw a young girl really about to have a meltdown. She's trying to communicate with her parents. Her body doesn't have the energy to even generate speaking ability. She can't even speak. And so she's just trying to – she's starting to get frustrated. You can hear it. And the music therapist sees it, grabs a guitar, and starts playing a certain set of notes. And the girl who can't speak – starts to at least try to hum, starts to try to make a noise in the same tone and note that the music therapist is playing, and what goes from about to be a complete meltdown to a smile that lights up a room, and she starts singing, and everything that was about to be never existed, and it's a completely different path happened for this girl. And 8 hours later, you know, parents are calling saying, thank you, she's still in a great place and a good behavior. So, you know, these are some stories I could drone off for another 10, 15 hours probably about the things that we've seen. But that's why we're making a film. So we can house all that information. But those are some of the stories and some of the future aspects that we're really looking forward to.
Yeah, I mean, just sharing that story, and I appreciate you doing so, and all those stories are great, and we're going to hear a clip from Sam Maloney here a little bit later, but man, what a powerful moment to experience. I mean, just to hear about it, I can't even imagine being witness to something like that, you know, when you're talking about music therapy, and that kind of parlays into my next scenario here, where music therapy almost, in a way, is kind of a lost art in a lot of different areas. Talk to me about, you know, you worked with Amber Weldon Stevens in Georgia. And her role in the film, you can talk to me about that, and also the role in just music therapy in general across the United States, and how, you know, those programs and those abilities are becoming less and less viable for people.
Sure. Amber Weldon Stevens was somebody that we were introduced to by the George Center, which is a music therapy group headed by Jamie George, who is absolutely one of the coolest people I've ever gotten to meet. She's awesome. Her therapy group, Lori, Andrew, Andrea, these music therapists are some dynamic, fun, and interactive people. So they introduced us to Amber Weldon Stevens because she actually worked with Andrew and a number of other therapists that had come through that area. And she has mentored and helped really develop the programs in Fulton County. And I didn't give you the full clip. I gave you a piece of it, but you know, she's been doing it since about the early 90s, and she's grown it from one music therapist to, I believe, 13 music therapists serving almost eight to nine schools a week. And it's really amazing what she's done, and what's even more amazing are the music therapists that have come out of her programs and extending the amazing work that she's been doing. Music therapy itself is as old as time. Hindu philosophy based on Vedic scripture you know, the om, when people meditate, om, that noise that people make and that utterance is actually, in their culture, the original sound that has created all of that vibrations. And when you get into quantum mechanics and string theory, that actually makes some amount of sense in terms of vibrational patterns and different levels of wavelengths creating firm matter. Because when you think about it, atoms and all of those are just, you know, firing around and doing different things, and solid matter itself is made up of a bunch of vibrating patterns. And so from a historical standpoint, you can date music all the way back to the history of the Hindu civilization. In the Bible, you find different scriptures where music is used as a healing mechanism. From a more current standpoint, you find music being used in hospitals in World War I and World War II. And that's really in America where it got its start, was working with pain management, post-traumatic stress syndrome, and just ways of nurses communicating with the patients in different ways. And they found that music was really a healing mechanism. Despite all of its history, despite the science and the known facts that music literally can increase the size of your brain, music therapy is only certified in 3 states currently. And many states are currently fighting for the certification, but it's an ongoing process, and it's happening in a lot of places, but it's still not widely known. And that's why what's been so fun about it is we're not fighting against anybody. There's no coalition against music therapy or some strange group with long-haired people, talking about trying to fight it back. But it's really just it's more of an education process and just introducing it to people. And that's fun. Introducing people to things is a great time, honestly. And you become a facilitator at that point. So music therapy is old as time, but it still has a lot of time left, and it has a lot of space to grow. And we hope from the perspective of Terror Rising Records to be able to help increase that space and to expedite the time that it takes for people to understand music therapy.
No, I think it's well said, man. I tell you what, let's take a quick break, and we'll hear a small clip from the film. And this is actually, I believe, is Amber Weldon Stevens, kind of talking about really what we're talking about. Just kind of give people an idea what to expect with the film a little bit.
Thank you.
The struggle to expand music therapy is nothing new. In fact, it has lasted for decades. Please join us to help spread the message of this wonderful healing tool.
You know, it started over the next day, and by the beginning of the 5th year, we were able to hire another one, another music therapist, Jen Debadu, and she split the county with me. And as the years went on, I begged for another and then begged for another and showed the need. And every time we were able to add another music therapist, we add a new population. We were able to go into the middle schools and then to go into the high schools. And then we did all the early intervention, and we did the 3-year-olds. So now we're 3-year-olds through 21 years of age. We're in 65 schools, and we have 13. Music therapist. 65 schools. 13 therapists serve 65 schools. It's a crazy week. It's never dull. We're always moving. Some therapists have 8, 9, and 10 schools a week. And I believe we've had great funding and support. The school board has always funded.
All right, that's a small clip there from the film done by Terror Rising Records and Michael from Terror Rising Records. Again, appreciate you coming on tonight. And I want to tell you, you've been traveling. Gosh, you've been up and down the road a lot. And then just kind of give me an idea. You shared some stories from the road. Talk to me about, some of the interesting people you've met, whether it be good or bad, and any funny stories from the road. I imagine you got a couple funny stories from the road, right?
Dude, I've got a great story for you. I'll try not to take up too much time, but the whole fact of the story is it's one of the best stories of my life, to be honest, because it was one of the coolest interactions. It was totally organic. We were standing outside of a bar owned by Carlos Santana in Austin, Texas, and this guy from a band that was in town, he saw us standing outside, and he was like, "Hey, are you guys from out of town?" And we told him that we were, and he was like, "Oh, so am I." He was like, "I don't know anybody here." And so I was like, "Cool." And he was like, "Let me buy you lunch." And I was like, "That's what better way to meet somebody than, hey, let me buy you lunch?" And I figured this was going to be a con, but it never turned out to be that. So anyway, he's a bassist in a Norteño band. And Norteño is native to northern Mexico and the indigenous people there. And it's really caught on with some of the Hispanic culture and Latin America culture here in America. And so he just happened to be in town playing a show. So he's like, he's buying us shots and beers and full lunches. And he gives us backstage passes to his show that night. And he's like, hey, come film, we'll interview. And so I'm like, that's awesome. Yeah, dude, that's incredible. Like, we'll come. And it was at this crazy club it's all Mexican cowboys. And I say that not from I'm not even saying that from a disrespectful standpoint. They're literally, it was entirely Mexican people, and they're cowboys. They worked on ranches and different things like this, and they were dressed accordingly with hats and the type of boots that are that represent this culture extremely well. And they have speakers in the wall. They have speakers coming out of the floor. They got speakers in the ceilings. Speakers on the bar. I mean, it's the loudest. There's lights. It's the best light show you've ever seen. It's just a club. I mean, with a great dance floor. And so we go to interview the lead singer, and we ask him to sign the papers to make sure that we can use the footage and the story. And he freaks out and thinks that we're asking for immigration papers, and like loses it and starts running off and totally thinks we're like the INS and ICE and all that stuff. And he's just like, I don't have papers. And he's screaming and yelling, and his bandmates, they speak English, he doesn't, and they're trying to explain that we're just trying to film a movie. So a lot more information got out than needed to. We cut that out of the film, but it was, yeah, it was just, we never really expected to have that happen on camera, and it actually did. So, yeah.
Oh, man, that's hilarious, man. That sounds like a skit from Saturday Night Live or something, man. That could probably be on the blooper reel or something for sure, man.
I mean, they have to probably change the immigration law here in the next couple of months before we release that. But no, at least in the personal terrorizing blooper reel, that one will forever remain is one of the most organic moments of you know, where communication breakdown can happen. And what was honestly our good intention to get them a part of a film, this person didn't understand. And that's where our languages with words sometimes can break down. So we learned a lot from the experience. It was funny as hell. I mean, it was absolutely funny. But it was interesting to note to see just how honest you can be and how sometimes people can actually get that wrong.
Yeah, definitely, man. And, you know, this project – great cause, man. I think it tells a story that needs to be told. And I really see this. I mean, I don't put a lot of pressure on here, but I see this as an ongoing project for you, man. I really do. And I don't mean that in a negative way by any means. This could be something that you could probably parlay into maybe several films because it's such a vast, open. I mean, there's so much to explore, and music is so powerful on a lot of different levels, you know, whether it be, you know, healing from an injury or, you know, mental illness. You know, we've touched on a lot of those topics, and I want to play a clip, a man that you mentioned earlier in the interview, and that is Sam, I think, Maloney. And really interesting, powerful young man who is really kind of embrace this. If you don't mind, let's take a small clip. I believe this is his mother talking about the benefit of him being in music therapy.
Yes.
And the really cool thing about Sam is that with his explosive behavior in the beginning, when he was like 4 or 5 years old when we started, he would scream all the way to music therapy. But when he got there, the music therapist had him beat on drums. And he says he has sensory issues. And I said, what's sensory issues? And he says they call it the deep proprioceptive movement that our kids need to be regulated in the world. And he says, and once he beats on the drums for 20 minutes, he's fine. And so, you know, music therapy is what got me to really fight for a sensory diet in school. And so without music therapy, I would have never learned what that stuff is. And what's so great about the therapist at Hochstein's is, like, you know, through Joe, I...
Great stuff, man. And again, those are just small snippets, obviously, from the film. Now, do you have a release date? I know you're still filming and still working, and you've come up with some snags that we've talked about personally. You know, the film title is The Case for Music. Do you have a tentative release date for the film itself?
We do, and we probably aren't going to call it the case for music. Just as we've gone, if we've gone more in, this isn't just about music in terms of music's sake. This is more of a healing perspective and a more medical and scientific approach. So, I've got a brand new production team with me that is music therapy based and music education based, and they're helping me develop this film in a way that can best express the diversity in terms of cross-generational. Cross-cultural perspectives, and basically what we're going to do is go out for another 3-month tour this August and film extensively throughout the country, throughout Canada. We've been invited to Montreal, we've been invited to Toronto, and in various places in the Ontario province as well as Vancouver. And I'm pumped actually because the Vancouver Student Association of Music Therapists is really pumped about our project and wants to become involved. And we really do want to reach out to the current music therapist in training and music therapy students everywhere that are interested in helping this cause even grow and get out there and help all of us get this message from social media to just in people's ears. And so we're hoping to wrap up filming in Jacksonville and Atlanta area this November and be able to spend quite a few months on post-production to create something, a feature-length film that will be able to completely represent music therapy in the best light possible, to extend it to the places that it doesn't exist, and to just give people the knowledge and the option that it's alive and it's out there and it's part of our lives. And if it's not music therapy, then there are other options for music to be a part of people's lives. And we want to relate to people that you know, on every musical level. And a big tagline is we want to elevate the perception of music. And that means that music is entertaining and we love it. And we're going to dance to it. We're going to sing to it. But we also can be healed by it. We can be taught by it. We can be led by it. And we can lead it as well. And we communicate with it on so many other levels. And so I really am hoping, and I appreciate your comment earlier, Ryan, about this being multiple projects. I really hope, and what I'm gearing towards is our next project being global, and we're able to visit the different countries throughout the world where music therapy does exist, but also where countries don't exist. We've been invited to places like Iran and Korea and Japan and other places that are welcoming to the American population and places that aren't welcoming to the American population. And because it's music related, we're not coming on any other initiative other than let's connect. Let's find a reason to connect. Let's not find a reason to divide ourselves. And so that's what I'm hoping with the film. I hope you're absolutely right. I hope I can do 15 films related to this topic, and I still won't scratch the surface because it is that vast. It is that deep. And it is affecting that many people. So I really appreciate your comment earlier.
Not a problem, man. And I wish we had more time tonight. This is something I would love for you to come back and we'll revisit and give you a whole hour next time around, man. Because I think it's an interesting topic and there's a lot of different avenues we can get into. But I'm going to switch gears on you, man. A little bit, not talking about the film. I know you're a big baseball guy. The baseball season literally just got underway this week. Go ahead and give me your division winners for the AL and the NL, National League and American League, and your wild cards. Let's hear them, man. I'm putting you on the spot.
Cool. No, I appreciate it. And because I don't work for a network, I'm going to be completely biased and tell you what I actually think. And I like that. So in the AL East, the Orioles, I think they will win it, and I want them to win it. I think it'll be tough with Jeter coming back midseason, and the Red Sox will be a little bit tougher. Tampa Bay is always strong, but I do think the Orioles are going to take the AL East. I think the Tigers are hands down the favorite in the American League. So the Central, I do think they'll lock up. And I think the AL West is going to have – I think the Angels will overcome some of what – I know they've got some big pickups. I think they're going to take it, and I could see the Rangers getting the wild card. In the National League – I'm divided because, see, I grew up, my father played in the Phillies organization, and so I'm completely loyal to Philadelphia. But being here in D.C., seeing Bryce Harper drop those two bombs yesterday in Strasburg completely dominate the Miami Marlins, I do think the Nats are going to win the AL East. And I would like to see the Pirates win the NL Central. I don't know. The Reds are really strong, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Pirates. I think the Giants will take the NL West, and I'm totally going to be a homer on this one. And the Phillies will take the wild card. Tigers, Phillies, World Series.
Nice. Very good. You know, we actually agree on a lot of topics there. On the AL East, I actually have Baltimore as well. Nice. I don't have the Red Sox or the Yankees in the postseason. I've got Tampa Bay as the wild card coming out of the East. And in the West, I have the Angels winning it. And in the Central, I think the Tigers will win it. But I tell you what, a team that I don't know if they can win the division or get in the wild card, but I think a team that's going to be much improved with a lot of young talent, it's the Kansas City Royals. Everyone's been waiting on that team to finally, for the light to go off. I think KC's going to be it's going to be a handful this year. And you look at the National League, I'm going Braves, Reds, and Dodgers. I think it's all or nothing for the Dodgers. You spend that much money, you better win your division. And Nationals and Giants in those wild card hunt spots. But the Dodgers, it's all or nothing for them, I think, with the Dodgers. You spend that much money, it's a $250 million payroll, you got to win it if you're going to spend that much money.
And especially coming off the bankruptcy and all of the craziness with the divorce of their owners and things like that. Like I'm a traditional baseball fan, so they're still Brooklyn to me, even though that was before my generation. But I'd love to see the Dodgers being good is always good for baseball. So that would be a great thing to see. I went back and forth on the Braves and Nationals, but I had to, since I was coming on air, I couldn't go Atlanta. As a Phillies fan, as a longtime Phillies fan, I cannot ever side with the Braves, no matter how good they might be, and they are good this year.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Well, hey, Michael, I appreciate you taking the time talking some baseball, talking about your film. If people want to know more about you, more about Terrorizing Records, how can they find out more information about you?
They can go to our main website, which is www.terra-rising.com. And we're always live on Facebook, facebook.com/terra-rising records, T-E-R-R-A, Rising Records. And then Twitter is happening. I think Twitter happens sometimes without me, but it's at Rising Terra, Rising, T-E-R-R-A is where they can find us on Twitter. So I hope people come and check us out. We're very interactive. And we like to give back to the people that are supporting us and joining us in this project. So I really hope that folks find us and get involved with the project, because it's a big thing and we need everybody's help.
Well, it's a great project. It's a great cause. And tell you what, man, come back. Let's revisit it again. We'll do a full hour. I hope I did you justice tonight, and we'll be in touch, my friend.
Ryan, you're the man. I really appreciate it. Thank you for everything. Any time at all is appreciated, and I'd love to come back on. As we get closer to the road and stuff, we'll definitely have a lot of good updates and information. So I love this show. I love the format, and the energy's feeling good. So have me on anytime. Thank you for the opportunity.
Wonderful. That is Michael from Terrorizing Records. And now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, coming to the Revelator show this evening, hailing and Minneapolis, Minnesota, the lead singer of Three Pill Morning, Jeff.
Hey, what's up, Ryan?
Hey, Jeff, how's it going, man? How you
it's
doing,
going
tonight,
good.
Man? Good, man. Hey, again, thanks for taking the time out for us. And you know, you guys have been busy, man. You had the new album come out last summer, and you guys are getting ready to hit the road again. You guys have been touring nonstop. You have a big show coming up. You guys are going to be playing with Trapped. You know, talk to me about, you know, touring nonstop since this album really came out last summer. Talk to me about, you know, going to all these towns, all these cities that you're going to. Do you ever get a chance to kind of take those local sites in when you're out and about?
You know, unfortunately, we don't get to very often. I mean, most of the time when we're on the road, it's night after night. You basically get a chance to drive through the city to the venue, load in, do your thing, and then it's on to the next town. So, you know, every now and then we get a day off here and there where we can kind of be a tourist or something like that. But by and large, we've been to a lot of really cool cities, but not really got to spend much time down there. I mean, you know, we go to New York and we just about had only enough time to get a piece of pizza, and then we were on to the next town. So that's the unfortunate part. We get to see the city from inside the van, but that's about it.
Yeah, I'd imagine that's probably one of the downsides maybe people don't look at is, you know, being at those towns, you know, New York, or if you're in Orlando, or if you're in, you know, Cleveland, or, you know, got countless cities you guys have been at, you know, not getting a chance to, you know, see some of the local sites or, you know, kind of take in the culture of that particular town, man.
Right, right. Yeah, you almost wish you had a day off after every single one, but then I suppose you wouldn't get to too many cities throughout the course of the year if every other day was a vacation day, but it would be nice, though.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, obviously, you guys have been touring pretty much nonstop. I got to ask, man, what could people expect when they come out and see you guys live?
Well, you know, our goal is to be as entertaining as possible and put on a show that even people seeing us for the first time want to get into and want to rock out with us. You know, in this day and age, it's hard enough to get people to come out to a show and, you know, leave their video games and their American Idol and whatever else is going on to come out and actually check out a show. So we really try to make sure people get their money's worth. We're not a band that just sits around and plays our songs. I mean, we really get after it and want it to be, you know, a really, you know, really fun time for everybody and try to bring the party every night so that we're something people remember and made it worth their while.
No, I think that's good, man. You know, sometimes you go to a show and the band just kind of up there and they're statuesque a little bit and just kind of, all right, here's our 30-minute set, and they knock it out and, you know, that's it, you know. So it's good that, you know, you guys are interactive with the crowd, jump around, have a good time with it. I mean, why do it if you're not having fun? Sometimes I've been to some shows and you're like, are these guys even enjoying what they're doing right now? It makes you wonder sometimes.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you'll see us, we're usually all smiles and having a good time with the crowd. And, you know, the reason we got into rock and roll in the first place is because of the energy and the environment that live music has. And so for us to stand there, just it wouldn't even fulfill what we're there to do. So we really enjoy the way we do things.
Very cool, man. Now, I have to ask, you know, you guys played tons of shows and really have kind of done it the old-fashioned way. You guys aren't put together. You guys have been, you know, been on the road, you know, for a number of years now, playing countless shows, hundreds and hundreds of shows all over the place. What's the most interesting thing you've seen in the crowd on stage? You know, you're looking out and, you know, people were singing their songs back to you. Have you seen anything just kind of interesting, wild things? You're like, you look at, you know, one of the other guys in the band and go, "Did you see that, man?"
You know, even to this day with the bigger crowds, when people crowd surf and you get that mass of people and, you know, bodies kind of coming up and over the rail, that's always quite the experience. Just, you know, and it's actually happened at some of the weirdest times too. I remember we were playing a show out in Spokane, and it was one of our slow songs, and all of a sudden there were just people on top of the crowd surfing to the front, and it was just the most bizarre time for that to happen. But at the same time, it's pretty cool when you get that many people together. Granted, nobody gets hurt, you know, you don't want any of that stuff to happen, but that's a pretty impressive thing to see from our perspective.
Very cool, man. Now, being a singer in a band, you know, resting your voice, playing all these shows, do you have any, like, anything you do to save your voice in between shows or any pre-show rituals we should know about?
Yeah, you know, certainly I try to minimize talking as much as possible, and probably my bandmates appreciate that too. But, yeah, you know, every night before the show, about an hour before the show, I've got a different set of vocal warm-ups that I go through, and, you know, I do a lot of witch doctor kind of stuff as far as different vitamins and lozenges and whatever else, you know, if it's really starting to get to be a long time on the road. So whatever I got to do, and maybe just a shot of Jack Daniels if I really need to pull through the night. So you do what you got to do to power through the shows.
Right on. Jack, not mixing that with Coke. Are you going straight with the Jack Daniels, man, doing the 2 ounce shots?
Straight up.
There you go. That's the way Jack Daniels is supposed to be drank, I think.
That's right. I learned that being in Nashville, right?
Right? Yeah, exactly, man. I mean, you know, you gotta have your whiskey straight up. That's the way you do it. You know what? I want to swing back around here, you know, kind of taking away from the live shows, but, you know, with the latest album you guys released last summer, Black Tie Love Affair, which is a great CD, I think, personally for me, you know, from your first album, Take Control, to this album, you know, I could see, you know, the melodies, the harmonies, the vocals. You guys really kind of packaged everything together and really have expanded. Talk to me about, you know, the difference from where you guys are as a band now to where you were when you guys recorded Take Control.
Yeah, well, you know, Take Control was sort of our first step in stepping outside of Minneapolis and doing things completely independently and really working with some producers like John King and Brian Virtue, who had produced a lot of bigger bands and been a part of some pretty, you know, epic songs over the years. So they really helped us hone in on what it is to write a good rock and roll song and make something that really gets the message out of what we're trying to get in the song and really sort of get the hooks out there too. And that's not just from vocal melodies. It's the best guitar parts we could come up with, the coolest drum parts we could come up with, on and on down the line. And so, you know, Take Control was sort of that stepping stone. It certainly helped put us in a position to get bigger opportunities to put an album out like Black Tie Love Affair. And, you know, we kind of took what we learned there and tried to, you know, throw it 10 times higher than that the next time out.
Now I have to ask, man, you know, talking about, you know, working with John King, you guys recorded the album in Nashville here. Is there, you know, he seemed like a guy who's really going to push you to you guys' limits. I mean, was there times where, you know, any tension in the studio at all, where, you know, someone in the band had to maybe break the tension a little, you know, kind of maybe feeling a little stressed or anything in the studio, trying to him pushing you to your limits musically?
Yeah, I mean, we all do that. We all want the best product possible. And our goal with this was to, you know, try to make something that everybody loved in the end. And if you have a band of four guys and a producer and, you know, other people that might have some input on the songs, it's always difficult to hit that point of a song where everybody buys in on it and really likes where it's at. So that always leads to some intense moments because everybody's trying to push themselves and wants the best out of everything that we're doing. So the good part about it is the band knows that, and all of us guys are really level-headed on that stuff, and we don't get too bent out of shape about anything. But yeah, I mean, anytime you're putting in the hours on an album, there's certainly some moments there where we can butt heads, that's for sure.
Anything in particular that you could share? Or
you know, I mean on the vocal side of things, obviously you just want to nail apart and catch an emotion the way that you wrote the song. So you know, a lot of times it's tough to get yourself back into that headspace. So, you know, you get a lot of people in the booth yelling at you to try to get you back into where you were when you first jammed the song or when you first wrote the song. So I get a little heated back at them every now and then. So there might be some cursing and things along those lines. But you work it through, and in the end, usually they're able to push me into the place that I need to be to deliver on the song. So that's a cool part about it, too, sort of that psychology lesson for everybody.
Very cool, man. It sounds like, I mean, you guys are obviously a pretty tight knit group. You guys haven't had any lineup changes or anything. It's been the original four members, I think, pretty much from the get go, right?
Well, once we really started to hit the road the last couple years, so about 2 years ago, we had some member changes. But after that, you know, we've kind of stabilized as far as that's concerned. And you know, the reality is touring is tough, and you know, sometimes life happens for people, and the road that we're going down is one, like you said before, it's a different city every night. It's a different stage, and there's highs and lows of everything that happened in music and life for that matter. But we've been lucky. We got all four of us from Minneapolis now, and we get along really well, and we are able to give each other a hard time so that we can maintain sanity as we do this day in and day out. But it's a really good thing we got cooking right now.
Well, it sounds like you guys are enjoying yourselves, and that's what it's all about. But I also want to ask about the title of the album, Black Tie Love Affair. How did you guys come up with the title of this album?
Yeah, so we started writing this album, and one of the songs on the album is called Skin, and the first line of that song is, "I never promised you a black tie love affair." And it was one of the earlier songs that we had written to go with, you know, some of the other songs that we had in sort of the back burner. And as we started to write this album, it really started to define our identity of what the song content was about, what I was writing lyrics about, you know, what everybody was feeling. And we took not only that idea of Black Tie Love Affair, but it started to become part of what our artwork was. And we went from, you know, sort of the standard rocker gear of black clothes and chains and whatever else to, you know, we threw suits on and we got really dressed up now when we hit the stage. So we took it from just sort of a little idea or a little lyric and made it all about what we're out there showing everybody every night is that Black Tie Love Affair. And so, you know, to now see people showing up at our shows that have suits on and, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, it's really cool how people have gotten into it and, you know, that we could have an impact like that with just sort of that concept we came up with.
No, it's definitely a cool concept and theme. And, you know, you mentioned the song Skin, which you guys recorded a video or, you know, for that single, right?
Yes, we did.
You guys kind of did reverse of that because that was, I don't believe that was the first single you guys kind of, was that plan on being a single at some point, or?
Yeah, at some point in time, that was the plan. But, you know, we went with that song just because it was really the way for us to sort of bring the new Three Pill Morning to the world. And that song and that storyline and the way that we're dressed and everything is who we are, you know, when we hit the stage now. And so, you know, that was the way that we could get it out there to everybody. And at the time, you know, we thought maybe that would be our first single, but in this business, you never know what your next single is going to be. It's based on a lot of input. So, you know, it ended up being a really cool video and really well received, but maybe it will be a radio single at some point in time. I'm not sure.
Very cool. Now, the first song we're going to hear from you tonight is the second single you guys are pushing right now, which is I Want That For You. Talk to me about, you know, the recording process of this song and also lyrically for this song. Now, do you typically do all the lyrics on your own and then, you know, the band kind of has input, or is it more of a collaborative effort?
Lyrically, it's pretty much on my shoulders, and then, you know, we go through every single song and, you know, try to get to the root of everything I'm trying to say and make sure that, you know, everybody digs what's going on, and usually we're pretty good about that. So, you know, this particular song, we wrote in basically 2 days, and they were just two power days. We were down in a studio in Oklahoma City, and, you know, we wanted to write a song that just had this bouncing energy, and then for me personally, from a vocal standpoint, just to, like, push it to the max of my, you know, of where my ceiling was for my voice and just give it a shot and go for it. Right. And it ended up having that really cool dynamic of, you know, the, sort of the groovy verses into this just like almost sort of menacing chorus with how high it gets and how hard it hits. So it was really fun to push that hard. And, you know, honestly, for 2 days to come out with a track that only needed a little bit of cleanup beyond that, it was a pretty fun process.
Very cool. Well, I'll tell you what, man, let's take a break. We'll jam that track right now and we'll come back and talk some more. Is that cool with you, man?
Awesome.
Right on. This is I Want That For You by 3 Pill Morning here on Revelator.
I try to hide. I don't wanna let you go, but I'm wasting all your time. And I know this isn't right, so you should save yourself.
Morning with I Want That For You here on Revelator, talking with Jeff from the band. Jeff, really good track, man. Listening to that song, I definitely see where, you know, your lyrics, the voice being stretched there. Really great track, and I hope people will really dig this, the second single off the album. Now, I got to swing around here a little bit. Everybody asks you this question, and it's probably a pretty common question for an interview. We ask it a lot here on this show, but I have to ask you, how did you come up with the band name 3 Pill Morning?
It's a good question. I mean, the cool part about the name is it's one that everybody at least wants to ask you, you know, what it's about. So I'm happy to answer that question. You know, the reality is having a band name or coming up with a band name is the hardest thing to do. And I'm sure you guys have heard that with every band that you've ever, you know, interviewed. That's almost the last step. You usually even have some music before you have a band name. And we had this terrible list of terrible names and nothing we could really agree to, except one at the bottom of the list was Three Pill Morning. And our guitar player at the time was a lazy, lazy dude, and he used to have to take like three ephedrine to wake up in the morning, and so we put Three Pill Morning on as sort of a homage to him and what, you know, what he was going through at that time. And as we thought about it, it's sort of, I was just sitting there one day and I said, you know, this hits home for a lot of people. I mean, Three Pill Morning is three Tylenol after a night of drinking, it's a couple of multivitamins and something else. You know, we're all medicated every single day, so I think this will hit home for a lot of people. And, you know, we went with that band name, and it's just something that stuck with us and something that people really get into, and they get it. You know, I mean, there's even posts on Twitter and Facebook today, you know, like, I'm having a Three Pill Morning today. So, you know, it's good that people can relate. It's good that people have some fun with it, and we're happy we have it.
Very cool. You know, and when I hear your guys' name, I always think about those ads you see on, you know, like the infomercials of like, Do you suffer from shaky leg syndrome or work disorder? Or they're like, here, take this pill, and, you know, may cause, you know, cold sweats, gain weight. You know, you always hear the pills, and you're like, well, that maybe I do have that. I need to have that pill. And then you hear the side effects, and you're like, oh, hell with that. I don't want any part of that. That sounds dangerous, you know?
Right, exactly. But, man, everybody's on something, you know? I mean, that's the sad state of where we are, is everybody tries to fix everything with a pill out there. And I guess, you know, for some things it's good, and it certainly helps in some ways, but as a society, we're pretty reliant on our pills as well.
That's a conversation, I think, for another day, as far as the pharmaceutical company is concerned. But yes. I have to ask, do you remember any of the band names that did not make the cut by chance?
Oh, man. You know, something terrible, like, you know, some type of element and the word black, you know, like cobalt black or some terrible, terrible name like that. I don't even remember what they are, but they were something in that vein. They were bad, man. They were bad.
Three Pill Morning is definitely a good name now.
Yes. Thank God that rose to the top. Otherwise, who knows where we'd be right now.
Right on, man. Now, I have to ask you, you know, doing all this touring, you know, recording the albums, what do you do in your free time? You know, when you get home, you're back home in Minneapolis, you know, you're done, you know, hitting the road for 3-4 months before you go back on the road again. What do you do in your free time just to kind of unwind and take a break from music, just to kind of decompress?
Yeah, you know, the cool part about the whole band, and, you know, I don't know if this is, from what I've seen, it's not necessarily this way for all musicians, but as a band, we're all pretty athletic and, you know, like to hit the gym and like to play sports and do different things like that. So, you know, we'll do that, get together, obviously, when you get back to town, meet up with some buddies and hit the bars, hit the clubs, and you know, party it up with the people that you haven't seen in a while. Other than that, man, you know, get caught up on movies and video games and whatever else is coming out. So we kind of get into all of it. We're sort of dudes, you know, like to drink beer, play video games, play sports, watch sports, all that kind of stuff.
Right on. Now, speaking of sports, have you had a chance to catch any of the NCAA tournament at all?
Not as much as I would like. I mean, a little bit. I put one bracket out there, and I think it's already gone to hell, so I don't know. I don't think I'll be winning anything on that, but it looks like there's some pretty exciting games that first weekend.
Yeah, the first weekend was great. My bracket was pretty much destroyed at the end of the first night. I had New Mexico in the West region going to the Final Four, and they get beat by Harvard. They got beat by freaking Harvard. And I'm like, well, I was like, I just, you know, my bracket's shot, basically. Then the next night, Georgetown got beat by Florida Gulf Coast, that has been in Division I AA for like 500 days. I'm like, okay, right. Yeah, no right. One saw that. And then there's always that guy like, yeah, I had Florida Gulf Coast. I'm like, you did, really? I was like, name me a player off that team. You know, but
tell me their jersey color, even.
Yeah, exactly. You've never heard you on my 10th bracket. I decided, you know what, Florida Gulf Coast was going to be Georgetown.
Right. Yeah, Georgetown hurt me. I know that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's been exciting. I know. You know, the Sweet 16 here, there's a lot of interesting matchups, Syracuse, Indiana, and, you know, the list goes on and on there. But being from Minneapolis, Minnesota, obviously a big Vikings fan, Adrian Peterson had a season to remember. I mean, you know, almost setting the rushing record, which is held by Eric Dickerson, and you know, you guys made the playoffs. No one, including myself, thought you guys would be in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, it was a nice surprise. The problem with Minnesota fans is we're all so jaded, and you know, we're always bitter and always sarcastic about what's going to happen. So the fact that we made the playoffs was good. I think everybody here, well, probably everybody nationally, with what AP did coming back, really wish that he would have broken that record. You know, I mean, I know they're there to win the game and stuff like that, but that would have been something sweet. But I guess we'll have to see what happens. You know, another new team this year, and we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, I think Minnesota, it's going to be interesting. You guys lose Percy Harvin, and I don't know. You know, that team has some holes. I don't know if Christian Ponder is the answer or not at quarterback, but it'll be interesting to see. And I understand, Neil, where you're coming from. Is I'm a Cleveland sports fan. I grew up outside of Cleveland. So as a Browns fan, Cavs fan, and Indians fan, it's tough. I feel like doing a shot at Jack Daniels right now just talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're coming from a similar place. So where do you stand on the whole LeBron James thing? Have you forgiven him now for going to Miami and would welcome him back with open arms? Or what's your take on that?
You know what? At first I was jaded, you know, and then looking back at it, I'm like, even he realizes he didn't handle it the right way. And there's no doubt in my mind he is the best basketball player on the planet. Hands down, you can't deny it. It's undeniable. But it's, you know, and I think that it took him making that mistake leaving Cleveland, the way he did it with the big, you know, TV special and, you know, doing all that with ESPN. And I think it took that and having the backlash of that for him to really gain maturity to realize, man, if he had to do it over again, he'd do it a different way. And I think the city's divided on whether or not if they would welcome him back. I would say, you know what, if LeBron James wants to come back in two seasons after winning a couple rings in Miami, go right ahead. He's the greatest Cavalier player to ever put on a uniform for seven seasons, and I would welcome him back. You know, if he wanted to close his, you know, last three or four years of his career out in Cleveland. Now, he's the best basketball player on the planet, and I think his maturity level, going to the Olympics, winning the gold medal, winning the title, and also suffering the defeat of losing that first year out of Miami and having the media backlash that he did, I think you're seeing the maturity as him as a person too.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Now, Jeff, you know, you guys are hitting the tour. Now, you guys are going to be out in my neck of the woods here sometime in April in Clarksville, Tennessee. You know, the 16-show tour with Trapped. You guys would be pretty excited about that. I mean, you guys have played with a lot of different bands. You know, you guys have played with Seven Dust. The list goes on and on. Is there any certain bands that you remember playing with or have had the luxury of playing with that you guys really, really would like to hit the road again with?
Seven Dust is definitely at the top of that list. I mean, all of us going into that tour were such huge fans of that band, and they're just the most, you know, awesome down to earth guys, and they put on a phenomenal show every night. Now they got this new album out right now that's really, really good. So yeah, I mean, I think we'd all be excited about that. But you know, the bands that we've had a chance to tour with, they've all been great, and they've all been phenomenal tours for us. So we'd go back out with anybody we've been on the road with before.
Very cool, man. Now, hey, if people are interested in finding out what you guys are up to, where you're going to be playing at, how can they find more information about 3 Pill Morning?
Well, we're in the usual location, so facebook.com, and then everything is the number 3 Pill Morning. So facebook.com/3pillmorning, twitter.com/3pillmorning, or at 3 Pill Morning. Our website's 3pillmorning.com. We're everywhere else on the internet, I guess, that you look, YouTube and all that good stuff. So you can definitely find us out there.
Very cool, man. And I strongly suggest, you know, for listeners out there, if you're not familiar with the band, definitely get familiar with 3 Pill Morning. They're going to be around for a while. You guys are definitely building something, hitting for the long haul, and I appreciate you guys putting the effort that you guys have put in so far, and keep it up, man.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you having us on the show.
Not a problem, man. Now, we're going to close tonight with the first single off the new album, which is titled Rain. What can you tell me about this particular track? Obviously, you got some radio play. It's a great single. I think it's a wise first single, in my opinion. The simple fact that I think it showcases, you know, again, the evolution of the band and really your songwriting as a whole.
Yeah. You know, it was one of those songs that we wrote in the studio that was just, you know, about where, and I say this a lot at live shows, you know, where we're all kind of stretched thin financially right now, and certain things happen in your life where you just got to put it behind you, grab the last 20 bucks you got, and just head out and have a good time, and, you know, maybe act like you actually have money, or, you know, have something like that, but just party it up and live it to the fullest. And that's pretty much what this song's about.
Very cool, man. Hey, Jeff, thanks again, man. And we'll be in touch. And best luck to you guys on the road, man.
Hey, thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
No problem. This is Three Pill Morning and Rain here on Revelator. Three Pill Morning here on Revelator. That is Rain. And a special thanks to Jeff from Three Pill Morning and Michael from Terrorizing Records for stopping in tonight. For more information about our guest and also on a coming show, head on over to omnes.tv. That's omnes.tv. Click on Revelator episode 5. We'll have information about Three Pill Morning and also direct links to their music and also direct links to Michael and Terrorizing Records with their music therapy film project as well. So, hey, next week we have a great band, Blame Shift, and a lot of other great artists coming down the pike. So keep it locked right here on Revelator. It seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody.
This was Episode 5, Music Therapy in a Three-Pill Morning. For show notes or links to topics discussed on this episode of Revelator, or to experience previous episodes, head on over to omnes.tv, that's omnes.tv, and click on Revelator. Thanks for listening.